world's becoming a dangerous place for us women. Lipstick Bodyguard looks just like an innocent little lipstick, but it'll instantly drop any attacker to his knees so you can get away unharmed. Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
This week, Diane responds to a concerned daughter's question. What can you do to keep your parents safe while in a nursing home? Plus, how scientists are teaching old drugs new tricks. And why a deadly new superbug discovered in a Japanese patient's ear is causing alarm for US and British doctors.
Welcome to Parents Are Hard to Raise, helping families grow older together without losing their minds. I'm elder care expert Diane Berardi. I got an email this week from Miriam from Elk River, Idaho, and her question to me was, she said, my mom is in a nursing home and I don't think she's getting the care she needs. What can I do? Well, first of all, Miriam, if you think something's wrong, it probably is. If you have that sense, if you're seeing things or your mom is telling you anything, the first thing I would do is, if your mom can tell you, if you can talk to her about what you're thinking, you know, what you're seeing, and find out what exactly is, you know, going on. If your mom is experiencing things. The second thing I would do is talk to the administrator of the nursing home and tell her what you're feeling, what you know, think is going on, what your mom is feeling, what you think is lacking. Explain everything to her, because that's that person's job to make sure that your mom is safe and getting the care she needs in the nursing home. If that doesn't work, you feel it, you know, it went on deaf ears, you don't see any improvement, and it sounds like you're in the area, the same area that your mom is, which is good, because you're going to have to constantly, you know, check and make sure. But if you feel that that's not, the issue isn't being solved, there's phone numbers posted in every nursing home with the contact number for the ombudsman. And the ombudsman is a person who advocates on behalf of residents in nursing homes. You can call anonymously, you can call 24 hours a day, and you can talk to them about the issue you're having. You can get suggestions. They can go out and they'll send an investigator out, just, you know, unannounced, and go to the facility and see what's going on, if it's something very serious or not, you know, depending on what the situation is. Of course, you can always move your mom, but that's not always feasible. That's not always possible. But if it's you have a strong feeling about something, you definitely have to be your mom's voice and alert the administrator, because maybe it's something that she's not aware of. Maybe it's something just, you know, with your mom. Maybe it's a very simple solution, or maybe it's not, but it does have to be resolved. You know, I had talked in a previous show about when you have to go to a rehab, or, you know, to pick a rehab facility ahead of time, or a nursing home. So, you know, in nursing homes, there's been a lot of publicity just recently about nursing homes. But, you know, if you're one of the main things and the main problems in nursing homes, a lot of times is poor hygiene, you know, for residents. And that's usually, you see that a result of not enough staff. But poor hygiene is a form of neglect. It's a form of abuse. You know, if their clothes aren't changed, if they're not bathed, if their linens aren't changed, if their diapers aren't changed, because that can lead to, first of all, no one is going to lay there, you know, in a diaper that's not changed. You just don't do that. But that can lead to bed sores, weight loss. You know, when you walk into a nursing home, is there a smell? How does it look? Are people just running around? You know, if people are just running running around and it doesn't feel calm and peaceful, well, maybe there is not enough staff, you know, because is that what's happening? Then maybe your mom isn't being attended to as she should. Is the place clean? And not only, you know, you're going to look obviously in the room, you want to go in the kitchen, you want to go everywhere. You're going to look in the elevators, in closets, outside patio. You know, you want to make sure the whole place is clean. Is the lighting, is there proper lighting? How does the staff relate to each other? How does the staff relate to patients? You want to see that. I always say to people, you know, when I'm teaching a class, you know, to new people coming into the field, you have to always have a smile on your face. You always have to be pleasant. This is a job you're dealing with the elderly. If you don't want to do that, if you don't enjoy doing that, if you don't feel that that's what you're called to do, then you should not be doing this job. You cannot take your problems in to work with you, because those poor people are sick. They need your help, and they don't want some grumpy person walking in and not even smiling and not even saying, "Hey, good morning, you know, Sadie." No, that's ridiculous. I was just in my office building. I mean, just not even related, but it's an example of somebody maybe who's not happy in their job. I was coming out of the ladies' room, and while I was in the ladies' room, I kept hearing this beeping. And I'm like, what the heck is that? And I walk out, and I look to the right, and I see there's a fire inspector, you know, checking the exit signs, and he's making it beep. So I said to him, "Oh, good morning. Oh, that's you making the noise." And he looked at me, "Yeah, this thing isn't working properly." And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, just what's it to say, "Hey, good morning. No, it's not working properly. Okay." And I'm thinking to myself, I don't think this guy likes his job. He shouldn't be in it, you know. So you have to really research and investigate, and you can't just you go make an appointment to a nursing home, but then you're going to keep revisiting, and you're going to just find ways to get in the nursing home. Talk to residents if you can. Talk to residents' families. You know, think of it. Would you live there? Would you want to stay there? So, I hope I answered your question, because you know, you have to be comfortable, and your mom has to be comfortable in that nursing home. And, you know, there are some good nursing homes. There are nursing homes that aren't good, you know, so you want to find one that you feel comfortable in and your mom feels comfortable in. Because today, people in nursing homes, other than, you know, rehab, are frail elderly. So you have to be your mom and dad's voice. You have to do that. As you can tell, I'm a very strong advocate for the elderly, for my parents, for your parents. And I'm sure you can also tell that I'm a strong advocate for keeping our parents in their own home if that's what they want and if possible. So I say to you, we have to do whatever we can to do that. Now, if your parents are frail, elderly, and they're in a nursing home already, then you want to make sure that their life there is safe and they're comfortable and you're comfortable and that they can continue and that the people there responsible for them are taking care of them. You know, what happened to those poor patients in the nursing home in Hollywood, Florida with Hurricane Irma, you know, that it breaks my heart. I was listening to a woman they were interviewing, and her friend was there. She had no family, and her friend was her family. And, you know, those were people's moms and dads, grandparents, friends. And, you know, it makes us all stop and think. This horrific storm happens, you know, the power goes out, and these poor people suffered. Their safety was left to strangers, and it was left to people who, you know, who said they did what they were supposed to do and that the help never came. I mean, state and local law enforcement are contradicting what the nursing home's, you know, account is, you know, so I don't know. We probably still don't know what the whole real story is, but those conditions have become so dangerous, and there was a hospital right across the street. So it really boggles my mind, you know, why these people weren't moved. You know, I read also, you know, that there were previous allegations against the nursing home and, you know, Medicare gave it a below average grade. So, I had talked about in a previous show about how the elderly don't respond to heat like you and I do, how they don't respond to cold. Their bodies metabolize differently. And these patients in nursing homes, they're typically frail and they have chronic conditions. So, you know, I know that. And you know, why weren't they moved? You know, they obviously were in distress. So, you know, people in these facilities, they're relying on those providers of care to keep them safe and to take care of them. Their lives are in those people's control. So we have to trust who is taking care of our parents, because they're vulnerable, not only to weather, but, you know, to these people. They're vulnerable to the people taking care of them. So we have to be assured that these people know what they're doing and that your parents are in safe hands. I know you've heard me say, go to your local pharmacy, go to a small pharmacy. My personal opinion, I don't like big, you know, conglomerates owned by, you know, this person and this company and this company. I like smaller places. I like smaller nursing homes. I like smaller rehabs. I like smaller hospitals. I like smaller home care companies. I feel that it's more in control. You know more of who the staff is. The staff knows more of who your parent is. You know, they know what conditions you have. It's just more of a family, like, you know, the people are being treated as if they were their own family. That's my opinion. I feel very strongly about that, and I feel very strongly you have to be your parents' voice. You do. You know, when they can't be there, when they can't on their own, or you have to back them up to make sure that they're safe. You know, in America, we're bombarded with stories, you know, and fights on discrimination, whether it's race, religion, gender, citizenship, but we hear very little about the injustice against the elderly. You know, we see, you know, the horrific ramifications of Hurricane Irma, but, you know, there are things going on every day, so we have to be the one to be their eyes and be their ears and to make sure that they're safe. You know, maybe fortunate, and maybe you never have to do that. But if you do, I say to you over and over again, whoever you aren't trusting in your parents' care, whether it be a doctor, lawyer, a friend, a nursing home, hospital, rehab, home care provider, you ask questions. And if something doesn't seem right or you aren't satisfied with the answers and you don't understand, then you ask more questions, or you don't stop, you go elsewhere, you look elsewhere. There's always a choice, and there's always somewhere else to go if you have to. And I say, you know, I always have clients calling me and asking me, you know, that's what I'm there for. What do you think about this? Or how about this place? Or I'm looking for something for my mom or dad. So, you know, don't hesitate to do that. At the end of August of this year, the Department of Health and Human Services Inspector General issued this early alert of their preliminary findings of an audit they did. And they found that more than one in four cases of possible sexual and physical abuse against nursing home patients went unreported to the police. They were faulting Medicare for failing to enforce a federal law requiring the immediate notification to authorities. That's the law says that a nursing home that received at least $10,000 of federal funds during the preceding year has to report the suspicion of a crime against a resident. the nursing home personnel has to immediately report the incident that involves a suspected crime. They have a two-hour window if they believe it's a serious bodily injury. Otherwise, they have to notify the authorities within 24 hours. So this statute has been on the books for about 5 years, and the audit says that Medicare has not been following through and has not been investigating and penalizing. So the inspector general said to Medicare, you have to go through your computers, billing records, and you're going to look for telltale signs of possible abuse of nursing home residents. And then when you find those cases, you're going to match them against hospital emergency room and nursing home records. So they found 134 cases where the emergency room records indicated that there was possible sexual or physical abuse or neglect to patients in nursing homes from the period from January of 2015 to December of 2016. Illinois had the largest number of incidents, 17. Michigan, 13, Texas, 9, California, 8, and it goes on. There's a list. In 38 of these cases, there was no evidence in the hospital records of the incidents being reported to the police, despite this federal law requiring the nursing homes to do so, as well as their state and local requirements as well. Of the 96 cases that were reported to the police departments, the investigators couldn't tell if the federal requirement for immediate notification was fulfilled. So the nursing home industry, the trade group, is saying its members know that they must immediately report alleged abuse, and that the American Healthcare Association said it's going to be working with the government to ensure nursing home residents' safety. So what I say to you is, you have to be your parents' voice. You have to do that. What is a good suggestion? There's ombudsmans in every state. I would call the ombudsman's office and say, listen, what can I do? My parent is in a nursing home, and, you know, I don't feel, you know, they're abused, but I don't feel that she's getting the proper care. I don't feel he's getting the proper care. Or what can I do? You know, what can I do to make sure that our parents are safe? You can't, you know, you can't rely on the government to do it. It's our responsibility. It's our parents. We can't rely on other people. You know, there are people out to help. There are. And there are people who will help you. And I'm sure, you know, the ombudsman's, they're bombarded with very serious things, you know, very serious issues. And they're, you know, maybe some of them aren't as serious. But I think they would appreciate you calling and saying, I know, you know, your job is to keep residents in nursing homes safe. How can I help? What can I do? And if your parent is in a nursing home, and, you know, if it's at all possible, you need to be there and you need to visit, you know, as much as you can at different times. And they may be in the best nursing home, you know, you can find. They may be fine and they may be getting the best care. But if you feel like Miriam, that they're not, then you need to do something about it. And you can talk to the administrators. You know, you can start with the administrator. That'd be fine, because that's her job or his job as well. And they want to make sure that your parent is safe, because that's their job. And we want to make them do their job. When we come back from the break, I'm going to ask you, can we find new uses for old drugs? But before I get into that, I want to tell you a story. I want to tell you about my friend Katie. Katie is a nurse, and she was attacked on her way home from work. She was totally taken by surprise, and although Katie is only 5 feet tall and 106 pounds, she was easily able to drop her 6'4", 250-pound attacker to his knees and get away unharmed. Katie wasn't just lucky that day. She was prepared. In her pocketbook, a harmless-looking lipstick, which really contained a powerful man-stopping aerosol propellant. It's not like it was in our grandmother's day. Today, just going to and from work or to the mall can have tragic consequences. The FBI says a violent crime is committed every 15 seconds in the United States, and a forcible rape happens every 5 minutes. and chances are when something happens, no one will be around to help. It looks just like a lipstick, so no one will suspect a thing, which is important since experts say getting the jump on your attacker is all about the element of surprise. Inside this innocent-looking lipstick is the same powerful stuff used by police and the military to disarm even the most powerful armed aggressor. In fact, National Park Rangers use the very same formula that's inside this little lipstick to stop 2,000-pound vicious grizzly bears dead in their tracks. It's like carrying a personal bodyguard with you, in your purse or your pocket. Darkness brings danger. Muggers and rapists use darkness to their advantage. We all know what it's like to be walking at night and hear footsteps coming at us from behind. Who's there? If it's somebody bad, will you be protected? Your life may depend on it. My friend Katie's close call needs to be a wake-up call for all of us, myself included. Pick up a lipstick bodyguard and keep it with you always.
Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
My producer said we have to equip all our parents with lipstick bodyguards, and I think that's a great idea. Okay, so can we find new uses for old drugs? So we repurpose everything today. We turn old churches into museums, schoolhouses into condos, old tires into artificial turf, and plastic bottle into dress pants. So now drugs have become a new and exciting target for this activity. Two high-profile examples are sildenafil and minoxidil. So both of those drugs began as medications for cardiovascular issues. But along the way, it became clear that they did other things. Sildenafil rebranded as Viagra, and we all know what that's for. And minoxidil helps hair grow, and that spawned Rogaine. Finding new uses for existing medications makes good sense because the cost to develop a new drug ranges anywhere from $1 billion to $2 billion, and it takes 10 to 12 years or more to go from the lab to the clinic. My gosh. So only about 10% of new drugs are approved, and fewer than 20% of them generate enough money to cover the cost of research and development. So repurposing can not only save time in developing treatments, but we know the side effects of the old drugs already. So ketamine was approved by the FDA in 1970, and that was approved as an anesthetic agent. But now there's research being done at Texas A&M Health Science Center, and they're looking at ketamine for new uses such as treating tinnitus, ringing in the ears, which there's no drug for that. There's no cure for tinnitus right now. Also, they're looking at it for major depression and chronic pain. And chronic pain and depression often exist together. When depression improves, people often tolerate their pain better. So no drugs are currently approved to treat tinnitus. It affects more than 15 million Americans. Soldiers who have been on the battlefield. We talked about teenagers who use headphones at high volumes, or industrial workers who experience high levels of noise, and the elderly. So ketamine could be a safe treatment. Although numerous drugs are available to treat depression, they don't always work. Antidepressants can take weeks or months to ease depression if they work at all. So ketamine acts quickly to relieve depression and ease suicidal thoughts, often having effects in minutes to hours. Opioids, like morphine, they're powerful painkillers, but they can sometimes make a spinal cord injury worse. Sometimes they can even make pain worse. Opioids also can be addictive. Ketamine, despite its use as a street drug, isn't thought to be addictive, but it might be habit-forming. So there are a number of promising candidates. Also, valsartan, that was originally used for high blood pressure, and now it's being examined to be used in depression, Parkinson's disease, and Alzheimer's disease. Tamoxifen, which originally was used for breast cancer, might also be useful in bipolar disorder. So that's, I thought that was really interesting, especially I know it's with Alzheimer's disease, it's just there's the treatments, you know. I think I was reading an article the other day, there's 120, drugs or treatments that they're looking into, but I mean nothing, you know, there hasn't been anything new. I know there's more and more research and there's more and more money being given to NIH for Alzheimer's research. People worry about Alzheimer's more today than cancer and heart failure. So we really have to put a lot of effort, excuse me, into Alzheimer's research. We have another new fungus problem. There was a hospital in London, Royal Brompton Hospital. They had this invasive fungus that they could not get rid of, and it was attacking people in their intensive care unit. And they tried all kinds of cleaning methods, and nothing stopped the bug from spreading. They tried segregating their infected patients, and that didn't work either. So they had to temporarily shut down their ICU. They finally, after a year, got the ICU back opened. And what they were found is this fungus, Candida auris, which is it's part of a broader fungal family, Candida. You've probably heard of it. But now it's been raising red flags for scientists who study fungus that infect people. So the CDC here knew of a single case in 2013. But as of mid-July of this year, the case count has risen to 98 in 9 states, and most in New York, 68, and New Jersey, 20. So the CDC's acting director is terming this a catastrophic threat. So we had talked about fungal infections before. Most fungal infections are acquired, you know, when a person picks up the fungus from the environment. But it seems that C. auris can transmit from person to person, at least they say in a hospital setting. It's very difficult to eradicate the fungus once it settles in. And they said some versions of it are not even affected by the few drugs that they have to combat fungal infections. So it has, they call it the perfect storm kind of organism. It has all the bad characteristics of a large number of bad pathogens. And it was first detected in 2009 in a Japanese hospital. They swabbed a discharge out of a 70-year-old woman's ear. And what happened is, Pakistan, some scientists were investigating these bloodstream infections in their hospitalized patients. So they sent samples to Atlanta to the CDC, and they found out that it was C. auris. So other countries started reporting cases, and they were thinking, okay, this widespread and simultaneous appearance of C. auris, they're thinking, okay, travelers are moving the fungus around. But then that turned out not to be correct, because they started comparing genetic sequences from the different places, and they found that there was different strains in each place. So scientists are saying, don't worry, healthy people aren't going to be falling down in the street getting infected by this fungus. But we even carry Candida fungi on our skin. And it likes the warmth of armpits and the groin. But it doesn't generally cause problems when it's on the outside of a healthy person, because we have other bugs there as well. But it's if someone gets sick, that's when C. auris can become a problem. The fungus can infiltrate the bloodstream, and it gets into the body along a catheter or an IV line used to deliver fluids and medication, and then sick people become sicker. So they're trying to keep see auras from getting into and spreading in hospitals. So what happened in London, doctors found that when a patient with C. auris was moved out of a hospital room, the next patient to move in would pick up the fungus. Even after they cleaned, they said, but the fungus could be found, you know, on multiple surfaces, the bed, the floor, in the room. So Dr. Curtis Donsky, chief of infectious diseases at Lewis Stokes Cleveland VA Medical Center, he's been studying C. auris in the lab, and he was trying to see, they're studying how long it can survive on surfaces in hospitals and which cleaning agents can effectively destroy it. And he said that, you know, disinfectants most commonly used in the United States hospitals are not that effective against the fungus. So they found that C. auris is able to live on surfaces for at least 7 days, but they believe it probably is longer because they only have tested it for that it could stay for 7 days. So the CDC has recommended that hospitals use bleach to clean rooms that housed patients with C. auris, but they say that's not a fail-safe solution because they find more of it on moist surfaces that are not typically cleaned with bleach at all, like the sink drains. And they say bleach isn't the easiest of cleaning regimens because it doesn't smell good, it's damaging, it can cause, they're saying, occupational health issues. So also, when we were talking about cleaning things in your mom's and dad's hospital room, there are surfaces that they don't think to clean between every patient that can harbor the bacteria, like the privacy curtain that separates the patients. So the CDC is recommending, you know, they're adopting the enhanced cleaning techniques used to control C. difficile. And they said that this should help with C. auris. But this is something now. We have something new to worry about, a new fungus. But now hospitals are paying closer attention to how rooms are cleaned and, you know, how much time is spent cleaning rooms. Now remember, if your parents aren't happy with their Medicare plan, Medicare's open enrollment is October 15th through December 7th, and that's for coverage to begin on January 1st of 2018. So you can switch from original Medicare to Medicare Advantage or vice versa. You can switch from one Medicare Advantage plan to another. Or you can switch from one Medicare Part D, the prescription plan, to another. Now, you can enroll in a Part D plan also if you didn't get one originally, but you may incur a penalty. So, my survival tip, drink some OJ. Not only is orange juice delicious and nutritious, but it can actually make you feel less anxious. According to WebMD, foods and drinks high in vitamin C, like orange juice, physiologically reduce stress by lowering the levels of the stress hormone, including cortisol. So 2 glasses a day should do it. You can tell by that music I've run out of time again. If this week's show was helpful to you, or you know someone who would be helped by it, please tell them. They can subscribe to the show using iTunes. You can find links to the topics we just talked about in the show notes for today's episode, episode 27, at parentsarehardtoraise.org. I'm here to help you, so please tell me if there's something you're struggling with, and I'll try my best to include it in a future show. Email me at diane@parentsarehardtoraise.org. You can reach me through my website, dianeberardi.com. You can follow me on Facebook at Parents Are Hard to Raise, and I tweet at Jersey Elder Care. Parents Are Hard to Raise is a Counterthink Media production. The music used in this broadcast was managed by Cosmo Music, LLC, New York, New York, under license of Broadcast Music Incorporated. Thank you so much for listening. See you again next week.